Hi, I'm Frank Ferris, one of the principals of the Palliative Care Interdisciplinary Curriculum. I want to personally thank you for joining us for this module in our series of patient interviews.
So Pepe, tell me what you understand about your health now.
Interesting question. I understand that I am at a pivotal point, I guess. I'm at some juncture. And it is necessary for me to join hospice. And so I'm starting a new journey. And it's scary. It's just downright scary for everybody, because all of a sudden there are whole new things that you think about putting in place that you haven't done before. You think about the urgency of a lot of things. Like, I wanted to take a trip and I didn't think I was going to be able to, but I did it. Myself and my daughters Holland and Danielle went to New York. I didn't know if we were going to make it. I didn't know how I would do in the car. I called it my Victory 2017 tour, because I am victorious. And so we decided that this is how we would start this new chapter in my cancer. And so I think everybody needs to do a trip like this. It was so uplifting. I don't even know how to explain it. But we made the trip. Everybody looked the same, and I hadn't seen a lot of people in a long time.
How long?
I would say most of the people, say 7 years. And so it was wonderful, and we spent time with a lot of one-on-one, and it was loving. It was a high that you can't even imagine. It was just, I guess, I don't know what my expectations were, but I know for me, expectations run pretty high. And so mine were very high, but I couldn't have even dreamed of expectations that were reached. It was just amazing. And we did this a month ago, and I am still living off of that excitement. It was just, anybody who is at this juncture, really think about doing this, because it is so, it's just so life nourishing.
So do you associate then the decision to enroll in the hospice program with the sense of urgency to connect with family and friends?
Yes, I would certainly rather do everything now than wait for people to come to a funeral. I want people to see me looking well, feeling good, doing normal things. And I think I want everybody to know that you can really do a lot more than you think you can. And I know for myself that's true, and I'm hoping everybody try it, even a small step in doing something.
But I'm hearing you say that the sense of urgency, knowing that life is shorter, and then this need to connect, were really powerful for you. Those two things together are what enabled or led to this trip that was so meaningful.
Absolutely. I think, you know, my motto always was, you know, live, love, laugh. And I think this even made that more intense.
When you and I first met, you told me, you know, don't use the hospice word, don't use the palliative word. Now you're enrolled in the hospice program. What's changed for you about that word?
I guess I've learned a lot over 3.5 years. I learned a lot more about palliative care. I learned a lot more about hospice. I learned a lot more about terminal illness, and all terms that I still don't like them, but I'm accepting them. And I see that you can live a very good life being in the hospice program, and it also gives you time in advance, honestly, to get a lot of things in. When I say order, I mean you can have your family members talk to bereavement people in advance. you can learn about a lot of things in advance, and I think that's important. It's important for myself because I know everybody hates to talk about this. You know, you fear death, and it's very scary. It's scary, but it's not only scary for your family members, it's scary for the patient.
Yeah.
And I would really love to find a way to connect with other hospice patients and talk to them about the fear of the unknown and the fear of the unexpected, because I think this is the scariest part of this, for me, this is the scariest part of this journey.
Well, you and I both laughed before about your need to control things.
Absolutely.
And this is something that no matter how hard you try, you cannot entirely control what's to come. Is that the scariest part?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's scary because you don't know. You can't call somebody up and say, hello, you know, I'd like to know about this next step. What's it like? Because nobody's been there and nobody can tell you about it. But I think just speaking out loud about it gives you a kind of a peace.
Well, you laughed the other day because your husband died a couple years ago now of cancer.
Right.
And you sort of joked about telephoning him and finding out.
I would love to, but I'm not getting signals from him. You know, a lot of people tell me that when people pass away, they get a signal. They see something. I have not gotten a signal. So, Norman, if you hear me, I would like a signal about this so I have some preparation. I need preparation time.
Yeah, that preparation stuff. Given how afraid you were of the hospice word, and then the events of the last month, how would you compare and contrast that, what you were afraid of versus what you've actually experienced?
Well, I try to put the afraid stuff to the background.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to, like, not think about that until it, you know, puts this scary head out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm coming to a place of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
I have no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than stop living and focusing on that, I'd rather focus on things that I can do to make my life better, my family life better, and the lives of other people.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I have this need to connect with people that are in my same situation to help them, because I find that it's helping me.
By helping others, you help yourself.
Absolutely.
Because you've said the support group you've been in the Cancer Center has been helpful to you. Say more about that.
Okay. I have been doing a wonderful cancer stress group at the Bing, and it has been wonderful. You know, we have a facilitator that we talk with, and everybody, you have to be in cancer treatment or have been a cancer patient. And it's really interesting, the hunger and for knowledge. Everybody wants to know about what everybody is going through, because I think it makes it easier for them. And people, if you talk to people who have been through it, it's so much easier for you to handle something. So it's wonderful. I think everybody should try to get into some kind of support group with other people in the same situation, because it's easier to talk to people who are going through it. I mean, your family is wonderful for support and stuff, but I think it's easier to talk to people who really understand what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Now, say more about your daughters and their reaction to this.
It was not a pretty sight. The day that you came over and said to me, I think we need to talk about hospice, it was major hysteria, because nobody wants to hear that. So it was very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
We had a very, you know, and you came to my house how many times in a week to talk to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, very tough time, because all of a sudden that fear is now right in their face. I mean, it's staring at them, and where they were putting it sort of on a back burner someplace, it's now, this is really real. And so I think they handle it the way most families handle it. But I
say more about that. How did they handle it?
Hysteria.
Okay.
Tears. Just not believing that the end could be so close. Mm-hmm. And yet you look at me, and I certainly don't look like somebody that's on a last leg, but I don't consider myself on a last leg. I feel for almost the first time that I'm actually living and trying to do things, because I got a lot of unfinished business, and so I have to stay around. And who knows, these doctors do make mistakes.
They do.
So it's very possible that I will be around a lot longer.
That's right. It is possible. But you just articulated a paradox, that you're enrolled in the hospice program, which acknowledges that death is close, and you said, and yet I'm living more than I was before. Say more about that.
Okay, before, I was very, very tired, and I was sleeping a lot. And then, through the magic of chemistry, I am taking steroids, mm-hmm. and they are keeping me awake. Maybe too awake a lot of times, but I'm able to do more things than when I was sleeping a lot and I wasn't feeling that great. So I am exchanging one thing for another. I'm exchanging sleep to be able to do things that I want to. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very difficult to do a lot of the stuff that I want to do, but I really trying to push myself to do it because I feel that I have some unfinished business with cancer and with the things that I would like to do, like finding a hospice support group for people who are facing death so that we can all talk to each other and just talk about how we feel. And where it's hard to do it with your family members, it's so much easier to do it with other people who are living it and who can look at you and cry with you and laugh with you and love and live with you. So I have to finish this process.
Some have remarked that when time is short, it becomes more precious. And I wonder if your experience doesn't illustrate that.
Oh, it does, absolutely. Because you want to do all the things that you haven't done. And I guess it's not that you're doing with a sense of urgency, but you're just sort of doing it because you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not running a race, but there are things that I want to do. I don't know if I'll ever write a book. Someday, I always wanted to write mm-hmm. a book, and maybe one of these days I will do it. Mm-hmm. But that's part of my plan. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, turning back to your daughters, what help, when you think about them, what do they most need now, or what do you most want for them now?
I want them to live their lives. I want them to go on with what they're doing. I want them to get the help for bereavement in advance, because I think it's important to put a lot of those, you know, in a row. Mm-hmm. I think the more you talk about it, it's not going to make it any easier when the time comes. It's not going to make it any easier, but I think getting the tools in advance and getting familiar with the people that they will be dealing with in bereavement. And I also think it's different losing a first parent and then a second parent. You know, when you lose, it's a horrible loss. My husband was a tremendous loss in their lives and in my life. But losing that second parent, it even makes it more scary. Having gone through that myself with my mother and father, it's harder when you lose the second parent. And so I just would like them to have as much, all their Indians in a row as they can in advance. But I know it's going to be a very tough time, but I want them to at least have the tools that they need to, mm-hmm. you know, go on.
Well, I hear you wishing for them the best lives possible, even when you're not around.
Absolutely.
And the more you can prepare for that now, the better you like it.
Yes. I'd like to have some control in the afterlife as it's coming forward.
Yeah. Well, and I think I appreciate you making that sort of visible and out loud, because I think it's more people than just you that feel that way.
But I think people don't know how to approach it. I think the important thing is approach. I mean, I wish more people would be out there and say, let's organize something, let's do something, because I think there's everybody, I'm sure, thinks about all of this, but nobody knows how to go ahead with it. And I think I feel like it's up to me. If nobody else is going to do it, then I'm going to have to take the ball and go with it.
Well, and that's why I'm grateful for you being willing to be interviewed like this, because it does make it visible out loud in a way that many people might not have an opportunity. I'm also, again, struck by the paradox. It's scary, so let's not talk about it because that makes it scary. And yet you're saying, you better talk about it.
Exactly. It's like a double-edged sword. Yeah. You don't know what to do. But I think preparation is important, and I think we need to talk about it, because these problems are going to be around after I'm gone, so why not get the ball rolling before that?
Now, one of the big barriers to this, of course, is who talks about it first. And I'm thinking, so you're remembering back to when I decided I needed to mention to you that, in my judgment, enrolling the hospice was the right thing to do. Now that you've been through that, including the effect on you and your daughters, what advice do you have to other doctors who, through every one of their minds, goes, I know I need to bring this up, but it will make my patient and her daughters, you said, hysterical. Ooh, I think I'll put that off for a little while. What advice do you have?
I said, when the time comes, you have to just do it. You have to say it. Now, when you were approaching me for that, I will tell you, I thought you had something wonderful in store for me. I thought we were going to go on a speaking tour through the United States for the American Cancer Society, and I was going to be doing a doctor-patient approach. When you said it was for hospice, I was deflated. I figured, okay, so there goes one dream. I'm not going on this wonderful... I didn't even think. It never even crossed my mind that I was ready for this next step in this journey. I still can't believe it, and yet nothing really changed in my life, except it fine-tuned a lot of things. It's putting things in a better place and a better perspective.
Well, I remember saying to you, Pepe, I think the cancer is worse. And your reply was, I knew it. The scans didn't show it, but I knew it. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And without putting words in your mouth, because my experience of most people with most diseases, when a doctor brings up enough courage to bring it up, on some level it's not news, that the person can recognize or see the things, and it's like, oh, right, you're confirming my worst nightmare, but it's not like it never occurred to you at all.
Well, you know what's going to happen. None of us are getting out of here alive. So yeah. No matter what, we're all going to reach this point, mm-hmm. Some of us sooner than later. But I think it's important to know it, and this way you can just go on that trip or do things that you want to do with a little more urgency, instead of, you know, just keep going and do the other things that you want to do if there's something that you'd like.
So what you're describing is by doing, even though it was emotional and difficult, and that because of it, some good things came out of it, this trip that you found.
Absolutely.
Spiritually fulfilling in a way that's hard to articulate.
It's so hard, because it was, you know, on one level, it was the three of us going and being in the car for an extended period of time,
yeah,
and laughing and yelling and, you know, doing all the things you do on this kind of a trip. And,
yeah.
But we went into it with a whole different approach.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just a joyous experience. Mm-hmm. And then just getting a chance to be with people one-on-one for a couple of hours, you know, a person, it was just so... it was so life-fulfilling. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah,
it was just...
Yeah. Well, and my reason for asking about it is because you just glow when you talk about it. And at least from where I sit, you have been thinking about going to New York for a while. And I remember one of your daughters saying to me, all right, well, she should go. Should we do it, in a month or two? And I said, no, I really think you should do it in a week or two, soon. Rather, don't put it off. Because you can't predict the future. If you feel up to it now, go now. And you did it. Which I think is also an important message of... Because human beings wait. We wait for things, and then I've seen so many patients where then they waited too long.
Right, and I wasn't going to let that happen. I wasn't, you know, I guess I saw life when my husband, you know, passed away, and his happened so fast.
Right.
So that you don't know what the next day is going to bring. So I felt that if, like you said, do it and do it now. And boy, we rushed, we did it, mm-hmm. and now it's just a joyous memory. So.
Which you said you're still going on in your head.
Oh, I still have going on in my head, you know.
Yeah.
But I think for my family and friends that I saw, I think they got a lot out of it also. My sister-in-law had a chance to spend time with my daughters and cooking with them and teaching them all kinds of stuff. And they also, when they were sitting with her, would look at her and they said to me, "Didn't you realize how Aunt Sandy is so much like Dad? That she looks like him?" And I never noticed it. I still don't. But I guess they look through their own eyes at her, and I look at my husband when he was 30. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and not sick.
Yeah, well, and I would summarize it, you all look through the eyes of love. I mean, this is love right in front of you. You can feel it, taste it.
Oh, absolutely. It's love at its real core. It's just...
Yeah.
And that's what I think people, you know, sometimes forget, that, you know, it's just such a loving, warm... Oh, it's just... Please, everybody, do it, do it, do it. That's all I could say.
Yeah. So before we close, I think more about advice you would give to doctors broadly who are taking care of people with, as you say, terminal illnesses, because they need to bring it up. Patients generally don't bring it up. The doctors need to bring it up. You said it's hard, but you need to do it. What else? What other advice?
Patients can tell if a doctor is sincere. And I think they have to think a moment and think about the sincerity, even if you practice it in front of a mirror, or practice it on a patient.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a person that doesn't have cancer, or a person who does, who's not in that terminal part of the time. But I think sincerity is very important. I think... and people want to know what the truth is. I mean, you know, you can rose color it however you want to, but I think it's very important for physicians to just be sincere. That's the only thing I can think of for mm-hmm. them, you know, and maybe if they want to talk to a family member beforehand mm-hmm. and just toss it around with them mm-hmm. how to approach it. But I think the way that you approached it was sincere. It was not going to be easy no matter what. Mm-hmm. And yes, somewhere deep down, I knew it was going to come to that. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it that day.
That's right.
I had this, you know, wonderful thing going on for myself, which right. bubble you blew, but I got over it.
Yeah.
But I think, doctors should just be themselves and take that time, because I think it's very important, and your patients will really appreciate it.
Well, there's sadness in the doctor. I mean, it's for me telling you, for any doctor telling a patient that they're coming to that point in their illness, there's sadness. So you're saying they should be honest and sincere, including about their sadness?
Absolutely. I think people want to know that doctors are human beings and they have feelings too. And for a physician, it's important for them to show a patient that they do have feelings. I think it makes it more tolerable to the person that you're telling it to.
Because what you're advocating flies absolutely in the face of the way doctors are trained in this country, which is do not show emotion, stay neutral. A neutral, even keel, not too happy, not too sad, just stay clinical. And you're saying, for something like this, seeing a little more of...
I think it's important. Everybody's approach is different, but even a regular... doctor, I would rather go to somebody that has that human side of them. I mean, I hate, you know, when you go in there and you're giving you 10 minutes and you feel like an automaton has come in, taken the information and walked out. This program is wonderful because you have time to spend with somebody and get to know them, and you know how interested they really are in you as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a it's very important. That's all I can say. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I think it's a necessity. Mm-hmm. I think everybody goes through everything so fast. Take the time. I think you become a better person for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that should be the last word.
Okay.
Anything else you want to say before we stop the tape rolling?
Just thank you, Charles, for all that you've done for me. And, of course, thanks to my daughters, Holland and Danielle, mm-hmm. who have been really wonderful, wonderful, wonderful throughout this. And I know it's really difficult for them. But may you all have daughters like mine. That's all I can say.
That sounds like a nice sort of traditional blessing.
Yes.
All right. So I think we should move on to coffee, tea, and cake.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll rate and review this podcast and share it with your colleagues and your friends. So you don't miss any of our new content, make sure you are subscribing to PCIC podcasts. PCIC is sponsored by PalMed, where our aim is to advance palliative care globally and ensure all clinicians have the latest knowledge and skill. To access more PCIC content, please visit palmed.us to review our extensive open access PCIC curriculum.